In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hatch.
Doesn't help that we don't have any three prong outlets anywhere.
No grounded outlets.
In that room, we have them, I think, and that's it. Yeah, everything else is old fashioned. Hi, people! I didn't see you there. How are you doing? Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat, episode... 69.
Yeah, it was way too much to hope for that you wouldn't...
Insert your favorite joke here. You know, in college...
All the way here, I was hoping, God, I just hope that he just lets it go, that we
you
just...
You can't. In this day and age, you
yes,
can't.
You really can.
You can't.
No, you can.
I can't.
You
in
can't.
My heart.
You can't, but in we college, could have... We could have said it and moved on, and that would have been it, and we wouldn't have had to hear your college story that I don't even want to hear, I'm sure.
In but college? I think it was sophomore year. It might have been freshman year.
Too much to hope for.
There was a guy that we went to college with who confessed to us that he didn't know what that meant.
Well, okay. What's wrong with that?
Well, it surprised us, but the big thing that's wrong with that is he wanted to know.
Let's pause for a second before you finish this story. How many things like that do you think I didn't know what it meant when I was in college?
Again... You're William.
Yes, but...
You defy all generalities.
That's not
although
fair.
Although this guy is almost William. He kind of defies almost all generalities also. But the issue was, you know what that means.
Well, I do now.
Yes.
I probably didn't know until I was out of college.
I don't even mean
even.
You. I mean, one knows what that means.
Okay.
And here's a guy who doesn't know what that means.
Sure.
And who wants to know.
Oh, okay.
It's hard... To explain.
It is?
Well, technically no.
Straightforward, really.
But it's awkward to try and explain.
Well, I imagine it would be awkward to explain to certain people, like your parents if they didn't know.
And we're all just sitting around in a student lounge.
Or an 11-year-old if they come to you and say, hey, someone said this at school, I don't know. That would be awkward. In college, it was awkward to explain?
It was kind of, because we were just like, what tack do we take on this?
What do you mean, what tack? You just say what it is.
I went with hand puppets.
Oh.
Not actual hand puppets, but I like took my hands, and I was like, this is the guy, this is the girl.
Although it doesn't have to
Yeah, I know. It. Later on, I wouldn't know. But I was like, so this is their head, and this is their feet, okay? And then we take them, and I was like... And then he just stared at my hands.
That's what I would have done.
And so then finally, I got it through in the most blunt, straightforward
manner. Yeah, exactly.
Manner.
That's what other
And he still just stared.
Oh. Well.
And then we were like, we're done. And he's like, okay.
I think
he got it by that point.
I think
I would
have understood if he just explained
no,
it.
No, I think he understood. I think it broke his head a little bit at that
oh,
point.
Oh, well.
But, yeah, it was weird. It was weird for us.
You know, this is the thing people don't understand about me often, because...
There's a lot of things people don't understand.
No, I mean, there's certain things I don't like to talk about.
Speak into the microphone, mister.
There are certain things I don't like to talk about for specific reasons, and so people make certain assumptions about me. But the
Russians.
The fact is,
pad thai.
Ever since I was young, I've been somewhat of a student of human behavior, and there's not any type of human behavior that I shy away from wanting to know about, or that I shy away from being able to discuss. You know, so when it comes to human sexuality, I'm interested in that, in what it is, what it's not, what kinds of things people do and don't do, and I can talk about that very comfortably about anything. What bothers me is when people start talking about their own personal experiences that I don't want to know, and of course I'm not going to discuss my personal experiences, but I can talk about it an area of human behavior and not have any problem with it at all. I mean, I can talk about all kinds of things that would embarrass most people, but it doesn't embarrass me because it's just human behavior and I'm just talking about
you
it.
You talk about that kind of stuff, I kind of feel like Grandpa's telling me about his old swinging days. It's really awkward for me.
Well, Okay.
Anyway, by the way, now that we're almost 5 minutes in, this is episode 69.
I already said that.
Of the Magical Talking Hat podcast.
Yes.
The only podcast that ever that Forbes magazine once referred to as, quote, Dickensian in its brutality of the masses, end quote.
Whoa.
Mm.
Wait, who said that?
Forbes magazine.
Forbes did.
Mm.
You know, you really need to start inviting me to the business meetings because I don't catch
this. Dude, that's just reading. Pick up a fucking book.
Why would I read Forbes magazine?
Because they talk about us and use the word Dickensian. One should always read everything that uses the word Dickensian, in my opinion.
I suppose.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William.
And it has been a while since we've had a live, well, as close as we get to live show.
A couple weeks, yes.
Two whole episodes. It's been 3 weeks since the real one. Remember, because we had to schedule one ahead because it's somebody's birthday.
Oh, really?
I believe so.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
So we didn't do it that week.
So it's 3 weeks it's been.
Yes.
That is weird.
Amazing. As I said at the time, I was a little distracted, so I said we had a situation. What happened last Thursday is the producer and I came home and found one of our cats dead.
Very sad.
It was very sad, and yeah, I needed to just sort of lose my shit. So we got everything together so that we could use our interdimensional episode so that I could deal. But doing better now. It was a little bit freaky. I found the body, which did not happen before to me. And
yeah, that can be kind of traumatic.
Yeah, it was. And I did the whole, you know, for a minute I thought he was asleep kind of thing and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But we got through it, and it was, sorry, it wasn't Ezzy. I meant to say that right up front. It was not Ezzy.
Yeah.
So don't anybody freak out that Ezzy's dead. She's still around annoying the piss out of us, and seems completely unaware that Grey Boy died. Twiglet is aware, I think, and he's mostly manifesting it by trying to have sex with all the inanimate objects in the house. But also just in general wanting more snuggles from us and all that, so. Yeah. So that was that. So that's why we missed last week, but we are here now. And get used to it.
I think I'm a little afraid that if we keep having to do these mystery episodes, people are going to like the alternate versions of us better.
I feel like they already do.
Really?
I feel like they do. And I don't blame them. I kind of like them better myself.
You do?
Yes. Hmm. We're kind of jerks.
Oh, well.
And they're evil, which is sexier. Evil is a sexier thing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So.
Well, I guess we'll, I mean, you know, they always seem willing to help us out when we need it, so I guess we'll see what happens. Hopefully we won't need it very often because what happens if people like them so much they don't want to listen to us anymore?
Pretty soon. They'll do the regular episodes, and we'll just be backups for them.
Oh, man.
When they get busy. Because even evil interdimensional copies get busy, I assume.
Yeah.
At some point.
Sure.
Doing evil things.
I suppose so.
In their dimension.
Well, we'll just hope that doesn't happen, I guess. But I suppose if that's what the listeners want, you know, listeners are always right. That's what I've heard.
We give the listeners what they want, yep. Unless we don't feel like it.
Yeah.
That's our motto. Sometimes.
Yep.
So, how was your 3 weeks?
Well, you know what? I think something that you and I have in common in the last 3 weeks is we both saw Brave.
We did both see Brave.
But I don't
think
know
what... You saw Brave the night before...
Yeah, before...
Well, wait.
I think we saw it before you did.
You did, but at weird time, because we saw it opening night.
Oh, no. Well, then you would have seen it before us. Or unless... No, let's see. When did we see it? Oh, no, we saw it the day it opened, but we saw Matinee.
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay.
That's right.
And we saw it that night.
Did you see the 3D version?
Or? No, we don't. Okay. Do
yeah,
that
we,
shit.
We didn't either. And I liked it. I thought a lot of the discussion about it afterwards was very interesting. But I don't know if we can discuss that without giving a lot away about the film.
I don't know that we can. I have been surprised. It is not garnering as much success as I expected.
Well, it's doing, I think it's doing a little better.
I don't mean financial. I mean, amongst people who I know and trust their opinion.
Oh, okay.
Some people don't like it. Nobody has said it's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But some people have had fairly mixed feelings. And some of their criticisms, while they were not things that bothered me at the time, seem legit. Some of their criticisms shock me. I'm like, I got a completely different take on things. In my opinion, I think it is quite Pixar worthy. I thought it was very good. I enjoyed myself a great deal. So I definitely think it's worth it, sort of for anybody to see. I very much believe it is specifically very good for young girls to see. I think it is one of the only movies, if not the only, like this, that doesn't have any of the usual gender bullshit that I see in kids' movies and in movies about princesses. And
although
in
people are
Disney.
Trying to impose a lot of that onto it, I'm noticing.
That's part of my thing. People are saying that certain parts they thought, and I thought, maybe you know I'm distracted, but I specifically know a lot of the bullshit that you get in fairy tale movies, and especially in any princess film. A lot of the big ones that annoy the piss out of me aren't there. And I don't think you can argue that one. They aren't there.
Well,
people are claiming that there's other stuff.
And the fact is, a lot of, you know, the big princess narratives that come right from Grimm fairy tales, that stuff that bothers you so much, and me, is in the Grimm fairy tale, too. I mean, this isn't modern capitalist romantic narrative trying to infect the minds of little girls. I mean, this goes back clear to these fairy tales. And I think a lot of the criticisms I've heard, it makes me think that that a lot of people really don't get it. They don't really get what was really almost groundbreaking about this film. And I'm noticing that. And it's almost understandable for the people who aren't getting it, because most of them are heterosexual people. And I don't want to give too much away about the story by saying that. That's probably going to scare people for me to say that. But
if it helps, folks, I saw the movie and I have no idea what the fuck he's about to be talking about.
Well, let's put it this way. The way certain things develop in the film makes it very easy for someone who does not think they fit in to certain heteronormative golly, I really don't know how to say it without just talking about what happens in
don't
the film.
Don't spoil nothing.
Well, I won't, but
this isn't shitty like Snow White and the Huntsman.
Let me put it this way. If you are not a typical straight person, there are characters in this film that you can relate to that you might have a problem relating to in other films of a similar type.
Okay.
Maybe that was also way too vague.
You're really going to have to explain this to me afterwards.
No, okay, I'll do that. But the point is, I read an interview with the person who wrote it, created it, or whatever, and she said exactly what I expected she'd say, which was they wanted to take the fairy tale and sort of turn it on its head a little bit. And in doing that, you know, you can't have a fairy tale and turn it on its head without having a fairy tale. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so there are, it's a completely original story, but it, you know, it's funny that I just got done reading a lot of Grimm and I realized, wow, this has a lot of fairy tale stuff in it.
Yeah, it's got plenty of its cliches and all that.
Exactly.
And
people are critical of that because they think, well, why'd you do that? But again, you can't turn a fairy tale on its head without having the fairy tale. And they just have all of the normal stuff that you find in a fairy tale before they can do something with it that's, I think, really, really different.
Well, and it's becomes the usual argument of it didn't go far enough kind of thing, which I'm like, okay, still did better than any
other
one.
But I'm not even sure what that means.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, oh, this was safe. They keep saying that. Like it wasn't edgy enough. And I don't really know what was so edgy, say, about WALL-E. Or the other film where they have human characters, Incredibles, what was so original and edgy about that?
Yeah.
It was fun, it was action-packed, but what did they do that was really challenging to animation or to storytelling or anything else?
Yeah.
So I don't think they get how different this story is from any story like it. And I think people who are used to living in a who don't fit into the heterosexual norms, but are used to living in a world where the heterosexual norms are just that, norms that everyone assumes applies.
Yeah.
They understood this film, and to them, it was groundbreaking, and to them, the word brave meant something very specific in terms of the title of the film. And, you know, I think people completely take for granted. Well, okay. So there was some discussion about the orientation of the main character. Again, I won't get into why that was.
Wow, I'm kind of annoyed that there was some discussion about that. I feel like the story really didn't have or need anything like that.
Okay, but think about this for a second. Some people, there was some discussion about that, but there was criticism of that discussion. And that criticism complained about how the character was being sexualized by this conversation. But think about it for a second. Every other princess movie, there's a heterosexual relationship, there's marriage.
You fall in love.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so aren't those sexualized? You know what I'm saying?
I mean,
So suddenly, though, when someone feels comfortable talking about the orientation of this character, whether or not that's okay to do or should be done or not, the conversation itself shouldn't be invalidated by, oh, you're sexualizing this character. Well, what character isn't sexualized in every other film, except it's, since it's heterosexualized, it's okay, but if it's homosexualized, it's not? I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
It's funny. This reminds me of a conversation you and I had years ago where we were talking about a certain young person who had come out as homosexual around the age of, I believe, about 12.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about this, and I expressed shock that one would be confident that they were homosexual at age 12. And you said to me, so were you not confident in your heterosexuality at 12? And I was like, yeah, totally. I mean, and actually later I was less confident, but at the time, basically, did I like girls in any sort of sexual way at 12? Oh, yeah.
All right.
So, and as soon as you said that to me at the time, I was like, yeah, I'm an idiot.
Well, and this happens to young homosexual people today all the time. Even, I've even had older lesbians ask me about this person you're talking about. Well, how did she know she was gay at 12? Look, you know, and I just explain, I knew I was straight at 12, and ask any straight person if they knew they were straight at 12, and they'll say they were, so why couldn't the same... And these older lesbian women admit, yeah, well, you're right. And then, of course, they explain how when they were little, there were so many pressures to be something else that it was hard to know.
That those urges would be translated into some other message.
Right, right, and so it was confusing. And so then they had to realize that things are different for young lesbians today. Some of them can actually understand what's going on with them at 12 and admit it, not having any...
And which makes me totally happy. And I actually, shortly afterwards, I think, posted a thing on Facebook discussing that.
Yeah.
That how pleased I was that the societal pressures had changed to that degree that you could do that. For those of you confused or worried, discussions of sexual orientation and sexuality within Brave are purely in the eye and heart of individual viewers.
That's correct.
There is nothing overt, and as case in point, I saw the movie and didn't think remotely in those terms at all.
Okay.
So do not think, I don't know if I want to go see this Pixar kids movie that's about being gay. Like,
no, it's not about that at all.
That is how somebody chose to take this in a metaphoric sense.
Which is valid
in the same way that any interpretation of a poem is valid.
Okay, but what was groundbreaking about this film was that that conversation could even be had.
That there was something in there that could be pulling that out. Yeah.
In any other Disney movie with a princess and a prince and whatever, there's no conversation about outside of the heteronormative context because it's a heteronormative film.
Yeah.
But now we have a film that allows that conversation to be had. And to me, that's really amazing. As Tony points out, there's nothing, you know, gay about the film, but there are things that happen in the film, or perhaps it's better to say don't happen in the film, that allow us to have this conversation about these kinds of things. And to me, that is great. And as you pointed out, it's great for young women to see, especially because here's another thing. I don't think we're giving anything away about the film to acknowledge that the character, the main character is a woman and she likes archery, a young woman. And she likes archery and things that we normally associate with things that boys like. But my recollection of the film, and you can correct me on this if you want to, is that in the context of the film itself, in the story itself, nobody ever told her that she shouldn't be doing these things or that these were boy things and therefore she shouldn't be enjoying them.
I feel like there is a moment where it is at least heavily implied.
Well,
but it bears out that is incorrect.
That's right. But also where it's heavily implied, again, this is right in the preview, so I'm sure I'm not giving anything away. She's supposed to get married. And it's made pretty clear that once she gets married, she's going to have to stop doing these things. But before that, I mean, I think in one of the previews it even says, you know, a princess doesn't put her weapons on the table. Yeah. It's never said a princess doesn't have weapons.
Yeah.
But a lot of people who are reviewing the film are calling her a tomboy and trying to make it sound like she's doing a lot of things that are outside the gender norms of the society she's living in, but I didn't see that in evidence. Nobody in the film told her she couldn't shoot arrows or climb rocks or ride horses or do any of that stuff. There was only... strongly suggested, I mean, and obvious that after she got married, she wouldn't be able to do those things.
Well, and the big issue was that there were other things people wanted her to be doing.
Well, preparing for marriage.
Yeah.
But she had days where she could do whatever she wanted, and nobody told her she couldn't do these things because they were boy things. That never came up in the film, which a lot of people are bringing that to the criticism of it and talking about it like that. But I think you need to be... You need to look at the film. If you're a 6-year-old girl and you're watching this movie and you're seeing this teenage girl do all these things and nobody in the film is telling her that she can't or shouldn't. Now, again, they're saying, well, when you get married, you have to stop doing them. But no one's telling her she can't in the context of the film.
Weird because, and here's a shocker to anybody who has seen a movie, but where early on our protagonist is doing things. And our protagonist's parents are trying to dissuade them from that, it turns out that maybe the parents aren't always right.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So even if that was explicit, like, that's not the lesson from the movie.
No, that's
true. Quite opposite. Like,
Interestingly enough...
I mean, and the truth is, it's more complicated than that in the film.
Yes, that's right. But interestingly enough... and there's another thing that they work on in the film that's completely revolutionary. Hardly any film does this, but I can't talk about that part because that is a huge spoiler.
Don't spoil anything.
I'm not going to talk about it. And it was so impressive what they did, and I was so glad. And again, that's an earth-shattering thing that nobody's talking about at all. Nobody's talking about how this is one of the first films, at least the first animated films that I've ever known. I mean, other films do this, but I've never seen a film do it quite this way. Exploring, well, I'll talk to you about
and
it afterwards, but I don't
know. Folks have no idea what he's talking about, again.
When we talk about it later, you'll know what I'm talking about.
And it's possibly the only Disney film, full stop, but especially the only Disney princess film, passes the Bechdel test with flying colors.
Well, yes, and I have evidence so far, maybe they've changed their website, but I have some evidence to suggest that Disney doesn't get it. They don't get it. I'm looking at their merchandising.
Yeah.
And the way they're merchandising
and
the girls.
She's officially going to be a Disney
princess.
That's
right. But all the stuff, for example, the costumes that they've made for little girls who want to be her do not look like anything she ever wore in the movie. There's a one product is like a scepter or a wand or something that she never has in the film. There are weapons that they're selling, but those are marketed to little boy fans of the film.
Of course.
And so, you know, I'm looking at what they're marketing, and I can see that, nope, they don't get it. And here's another interesting thing is, while I think young boys, if as long as they're not corrupted by anything that adults are saying, might be interested in having a T-shirt with this young woman on it, especially if she's pulling back her bow or if she's riding a horse.
Yeah.
Not so much maybe a Snow White T-shirt or whatever. But as you might expect on the Disney site, there are no shirts for boys or men that feature the main character.
Merida, yeah.
Even though I would wear a shirt with her on it. I think I know a lot of young boys, again, who aren't thus far corrupted, who would see her as a heroic figure and would wear her on a shirt just like they would Batman, Superman, or anybody else.
I think.
But this is an opportunity for Disney to try that out and to see. But no, yeah. Disney doesn't get it. They don't get what Pixar has done.
Which, on the one hand, is terrible because it's terrible. On the other hand, it's handy because the more they just don't understand and yet Pixar makes tons of money, the more they'll just say, yeah, you guys do what you want. And well, I'm okay with that.
I think anyone who thought that this film was safe, who said that, not edgy or not doing anything really interesting and new, they did not get it. Because I would say this is probably the most out there and edgy film story-wise that they've ever done, in spite of the fact that many of the plot devices and stuff were, yes, derived right from fairy tales. But that's what
I
like,
because at no point would I have referred to it as edgy at the time. It seemed very straightforward fairy tale kind of stuff, and yet all the things that piss me off, all the little niggling details that if you talk about them afterwards, people are like, oh, I didn't notice that, but you're right. None of them are there. And I was so happy about that. And yeah, and I think she makes a great role model to young girls. Criticisms that I have heard that may or may not be legitimate. Some people have said that the music was kind of shitty. The music was kind of shitty.
Was it?
The Celtic singing, like, I don't know who they picked, but it was sloppy and thrown in there weird and not, yeah. They could have done better with that, but it's not particularly distracting. Some people have been annoyed with their manipulation of the history of Scotland, which, if I knew what was going on, I would say, well, yeah, it's still Disney. They'll just fuck around however
they
want.
Well, I don't understand.
But the big thing is, not only do I not know enough about the history of Scotland to know how this relates, but I also got no impression at any point that I was supposed to be seeing the history of Scotland. I thought this was very microcosmic. It involves four clans, and I thought they're just hypothetical clans.
I'm not really sure what part of the history of Scotland they're talking about. I mean, one could say that Grimm Fairy Tales completely ignores the history of Germany if they want, and that would be a fair criticism, but is it an important criticism? Yeah. I'm not so sure.
But no, otherwise, I highly recommend it to pretty much everybody.
Well, maybe they meant...
Go check it out.
Maybe they meant culturally. Maybe they insisted that, no, a young girl would never be able to do those things in Scotland. Which might be true, but that's kind of beside the point.
Given who the criticism came from, I doubt it was that.
Oh, I see.
I think it was somebody who's way into Scottish history.
Oh, well, you know, okay, I think I understand what those things
are.
Highlands, Scotland especially, probably.
I'm guessing it's pretty close to the people who get pissed off at the inaccuracies in the Lord of the Rings movies.
Well, no, I think I understand what those criticisms are. And again, if that's something that is important to you, I guess I can understand it. But since they really were sort of inventing a fairy tale, I think they could take all kinds of license if they wanted to.
I mean, I wouldn't know any better anyway, but I also was like, I felt like this was some people in Scotland at some random point. And not only were they not representative of Scotland as a whole, they weren't in any particular time period that I would have had any idea where they were.
No, it's kind of like How to Train Your Dragon. I mean, here we have characters that are called Vikings. They speak with a Scottish accent, all of them. You know, obviously there was no historical reference there. It's just mixing it up to invent a fairy tale type story, and I guess I just took this the same way.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's good. Go see it. Especially if you have kids. Especially if you have girl kids.
Yeah, I think this is one of the first characters in film. Maybe I shouldn't go quite that far, but certainly that you can show a young girl, and it's a role model that is seems to me completely unburdened by a lot of the things that I often, you know, when I was taking when I was taking my young goddaughter to see films, and there was a female character who was even billed as a strong female character, I always had to talk about, well, you know, this part wasn't really the strong female part, and whatever. And this was if I took my goddaughter to this when she was 8 or whatever, I wouldn't have had to explain anything.
Yeah.
Oh wow, you know. And if you want to emulate that girl, gah, knock yourself out. You know, we don't have to discuss all the ways that it wasn't really that much of a female character or a strong female character. So
I will say it's a little scary for young kids.
Now, that's an interesting thing, too. There were some scenes in there near the end. You know, everybody knows that at the end of these things, there's a big scene. That was one of the most frightening scenes I've seen in animation, and I almost couldn't believe it passed with a PG rating.
Well, and they pulled up, they're taking some real life threat. Like, this wasn't like demons or things like that. This was like shit that could happen.
Yeah. Kind of thing.
And it was, wow. And I found it, but I also found it a really beautiful level of storytelling because it was a PG film by Pixar that kids could go see and was, you know, all this stuff, certain things, you know, are or are not going to happen by the end of the movie. Right. That being said, I was still caught up in moments where it looked like things were going to happen differently. Yes. And I knew it in my head. I'm like, I know that's not going to, but I'm still like, like, well, the end, they hold the suspense and the excitement and the scariness really did a great job.
Oh, yeah, I thought so, too. And it's Pixar, so they could do anything. I mean, you didn't know what they were going to do. And I guess that's part of the reason people say it's safe and all this stuff is because some of those things that you're talking about went pretty much textbook. And it's like, oh, why'd you do it like that? You know, you're Pixar. We were expecting you to do something way out of left field. But, again, I think they're missing the thing that was really revolutionary about this. And I think if you're not sensitive to issues that women and especially young girls face today, and if you're not sensitive to issues of people who don't fit in perfectly to heteronormative whatever, you might miss some of the most important and groundbreaking aspects of this story. And that would be too bad. I mean, try to look at it from the perspective of a young girl who's all the only other role model she has are the other Disney princesses.
Yeah.
Or try to look at it from the perspective of a 13-year-old lesbian girl who constantly is bombarded in stories with images of men and women hooking up and making out and doing all these things. But if she wants to see a film that has a lesbian couple in it and they're not even kissing, it's rated, you know, PG-13 or something, and she can't watch it just because they're in it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
reminder, people, there is no sex in this film.
No.
Nobody's gay or straight or anything in this film.
No. But just that, nobody's gay or straight or anything in this film. Come on. When does that ever happen?
Arguably, her mom and dad are probably pretty straight.
Yes.
They could be bi, I suppose.
But outside of them, the field's pretty wide open for just about everybody else. And what kind of films do that? I mean, just about every film goes out of its way to make sure you know what the orientation is of the characters.
Yeah.
Why do they do that? Well, I've got a lot of theories about that. But let's just admit that that's what a lot of films do. And for a film not to do that, especially with some major characters, that's huge for people who find themselves often wanting to relate to a person on screen, but then they have a certain romantic connection to someone who they wouldn't have a romantic connection with, and it kind of makes it harder for them. And it's not that you can't connect, like, you know, most straight people, if they watch a romance between gay people, they can relate and they don't have a problem with it. And it's not that people who aren't straight can't do that too, but people who are straight don't have to do that more than every so often. Yeah, yeah. So imagine what it's like when you always have to do that. And it's like, it gets a little tiresome for these people, as you could probably imagine if you think about it for a little bit. And here's a film where that burden is not put on them. And
without making it a gay film.
No, that's right.
That burden is lifted from everybody.
And that's another thing, is that it's not just because they avoid that. Even boys can relate to this character, who's a female. And that's pretty unusual and pretty different. Because usually it's like boys relate to boy characters and girls relate to girl characters. Here's a character that there's nothing to distract the boy from relating to her and being okay with it, because she's not going to go do something that's going to make him go, well, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
A boy wouldn't do that.
Oh, and it's so hard for other places to do. I'm still in the middle of Mass Effect 3. And Mass Effect series, among other things, most of the BioWare series do this. They work really hard at... They do the romance things and stuff, and you have lots of options.
You know.
There's some homosexual ones and some bisexual ones and stuff. And especially with Mass Effect, they've tried to make it set in a future where, like, sexual orientation is really much less of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people have preferences, and still, in general, they seem to be... Like, the majority of people seem to be straight,
mm-hmm.
but there's less... But every once in a while, it's just weird. Like, we're meeting a new guy who works on our ship now, and we're talking to him, and he's like, you got any loved ones or whatever? And he's like, I had a husband, and they go on, and it just felt really weirdly tacked on. Like, it was conspicuous in how much they tried to make it sort of inconspicuous.
Yeah.
And it felt weird. And, of course, Mass Effect has some other issues along those lines that I'm not even going to get into. But because we've already gone over 35 minutes.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I know you had a lot to talk about for 3 weeks, probably.
Nah.
No?
We started the Dresden Files game. We finally started actually playing.
Oh, now, see, I'm sure everybody wants to hear how that's going.
There's not a lot to say yet.
Oh.
It's really awesome.
Oh, okay, good.
It was also a complete mess.
Oh, well.
Brand new system to all of us, and it just operates so much differently than other role-playing games that is taking some adjustment. But having come from those 2+ months, I loved the fact that we start, and I just said, okay, we're all in this place, and you guys are sitting around, hanging out. And while I'm still getting stuff together and talking with one person, the other three just started basically... bullshitting in character. One of them started telling a story about something. The other ones were like, one of them was accusing him of lying. One of them was like, all this stuff. And they just did it. Just out of nowhere. And I mean, frequently they'll try and do it, but they went on for a long time.
Oh.
And I was like, they're still talking. This is so cool.
That's fun.
And yeah, I'm very excited about how this is going to go. And like I've said before, after this first introductory story arc, I'm going to make the players come up with the story concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm already talking with the player who is going to do the next set, and we're already putting stuff together involving his past and stuff like that.
Excellent.
I'm very excited about that. So, yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. We had to miss this week because some of my players were out of town, but we will start again next Tuesday. So,
great.
I'm pretty psyched about that. And, yeah, there hasn't been a lot else going on. I've been playing a lot of Mass Effect 3 and really enjoying it. I am fascinated that I am now... the Mass Effect series, the decisions you made, they actually access the save file, and those affect things later. And it can be really huge things, like people being alive and dead, and things like
right,
that.
Right, right.
And they have huge impacts. And I found it really fascinating recently, where in Mass Effect 2, there's a situation that's sort of the classic one, where somebody was performing medical experiments, and they did it really awful, you know, and they were very terrible about it and all this stuff.
Mm.
And the discussion as to whether or not to save what they discovered or trash their research because it was so horrible...
because it's unethical.
...is a decision you make in Mass Effect 2.
Mm.
In Mass Effect 3...
Mm.
The ramifications of the decision you made are felt, and you have these fairly involved conversations with other people about whether or not they think you made the right choice and what those ramifications are. And I'm like, this is impressive for a video game. And I also had conversations about, because I'm playing a female character, and I had some amazing conversations with a female of another species whom, at that point in the game, we had never met another female from that species, and we basically discussed their position as a woman within their species versus mine and what that means and stuff.
Wow, wow.
And just really incredible stuff. Well, that I'm like, video games didn't ever have this shit before.
Mass Effect is really good for that stuff, I've heard.
And to make it very interactive.
Yeah, and
like, it's not just that I'm watching scenes of this. Like, I'm involved, and I'm expressing my opinion. Right. It's very interesting.
And BioWare in general is pretty good at this kind of stuff, too.
Yeah.
That's really their
forte. They've been trying for a long time.
Their forte. It's kind of on their continuum of evolution to be going this direction. That's really their deal.
But yeah, so I still do highly recommend the Mass Effect games to anyone. They do get dark and somewhat depressing eventually.
Yeah,
but they're awesome. I like them a lot.
Yeah.
You guys still need to play them.
I know we do.
Okay.
The hat. Probably feeling
the reason we're all here, yeah. People.
Oh, you're not gonna like this.
It's from Azure Talon.
It is.
Fucker.
He says, Dear douchebags. Oops, wrong podcast. Well, at least he doesn't think we're douchebags.
Well played, sir. Well played. For those who aren't aware, douchebags are what they call themselves over on Happy Jack's RPG podcast. Of which Azure Talon is an avid listener, as am I. That's sort of how we met, was over there. And that's how a lot of people came to this podcast. I pulled from the Happy Jacks crew.
Well, he saved us a lot of time on the first question that we used up early in the show.
I don't know, this
show.
Is the thing, though. I am constantly in conflict with how I feel about the term douche and douchebag.
Oh, well, I hate it altogether, but it's on the card, so I read it. I never
my
really
opinions
liked that.
Have changed because it's a really nasty term, sort of in its way.
Yes,
and I think more fundamentally, like not just hygienically, but culturally to me, and something about that, I think, is why I like it in a certain context of insult.
Well, I
because there is this cultural burden associated with it. And I like to use it on people for whom I feel are propagating certain cultural burdens.
I suppose, but to begin with, I don't get it. I don't get how this particular object became an insult that you call people.
I don't either.
It's funny sounding, I'll admit that. And sometimes when I've heard this on a show or something, I'll admit
it's inherently sort of vulgar because it's an intimate hygienic issue.
But for women...
Yes.
And that's the part that bothers me. I mean, it seems like we're always, when we want to insult somebody, especially a man, we always have to find something that is you know, popularly perceived as feminine or is feminine or whatever, and that always bothers me. But I don't get it. I don't know why, you know, there's so many other insults people use, also feminine-derived, that I understand.
I was just watching...
But I don't understand this one.
Rerun of 30 Rock tonight that was talking about the C word and how Liz Lemon hated it so much because there's no response. There's no thing you can call a man that's the equivalent. Hmm. And the guys were like, we could invent a word right now.
Well, no, but of course, there's never going to be a word that's equivalent because it's just like words that are used, derogatory words for people of a particular race. The power of a derogatory word is inherent in the asymmetrical relationship between the oppressed and the oppressor.
The position, yes.
So
this brings up a very interesting point, actually, and I brought it up with somebody, but this is perfect. I should bring it up with you. Someone on Twitter, whom I follow and who I consider pretty funny, tweeted that their 5-year-old son had a new Transformer toy that he had named, that the boy had named Tranny. It's funny. I like, you know, it's cute.
Okay, well,
Transformer.
Yeah.
And I don't know what sort of responses there were. Theoretically, I don't know. But shortly after that, he tweeted again and said, I would much rather have my son play with Tranny the Transvestite than anything associated with Michael Bay. Which also, I think, is funny.
Okay.
And then...
I'm not sure I understand that, but...
The internet lost their shit.
Hmm.
And basically told him that the word tranny was the most horrible word in the world. Literally, because this is the thing, especially comedians tend to do this, when they get really nasty hate replies, they will retweet them, so then you can see what people are saying. Because it frequently is a really good way to diffuse the truly rabid ones, because now everybody sees what an idiot they are. But in one of them, I saw, literally said that the word tranny was equivalent to calling a transsexual a tranny was the equivalent to calling a black person the N-word. And I'm like, never felt that way in the slightest. I have, and when I asked somebody else about how they felt about the word tranny, and they said it very much depends on the context and who's saying it. And I would agree with that.
Well, yeah, but that's true for any word like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. What do you think of that word?
Well, I never even heard the word until, God, probably a year or so ago. I never heard it used like that.
Yeah.
The people who were using it that way, I couldn't tell if it was just shorthand or derogatory or what. This is the first I've heard of anyone thinking that it's a derogatory thing. It's not just some kind of shorthand.
And that's how I was.
Well, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know very many people who are trans anything. So, you know...
Do you really not?
Well, not that I... Well, aside from you a little bit.
I guess I run in different circles because of that.
But
I can... For listeners who don't know, I consider myself transgender, not transsexual. I don't think I'm trapped in the wrong body or anything like that. But I have some gender dysphoria issues. And especially in my younger days, sort of explored that area, whether or not I was transsexual and wanted to go down the path towards that or whatever.
Right.
So I suppose in that process, I have picked up a lot of transgendered associates. Because to me, I'm like, you really don't know that many?
No, I don't.
But I guess, yeah, I run into different
circles.
And
of course, not that I would have a problem. It just doesn't come up. So I don't, I only first heard the word recently, and it was in a comedy context. Because... Here, I don't know if other places, but here in Iowa, where we have more than our share of car enthusiasts, the transmission in a car is often called
a tranny. That's true.
So there's a lot of jokes about that, that association or that double entendre, I guess you could say. But I don't know. I would have to know more people in the transsexual or transgendered or trans whatever community to know if that bothers them.
Because now I'm thinking, and I do know, I've heard people who use it who are basically completely ignorant of the concept, and like that's the only word they know, and it does sound kind of harsh and offensive to me. I guess in my mind it's very similar to the word queer, in that I feel it has been appropriated by the individuals in question, and when I hear people who are associated with, part of, or friendly with said group, it sounds perfectly reasonable to me. But there are people that can say it that it sounds weird. Because, I mean, queer, lesbians, gays, and bisexuals, tons of them use queer all the time.
Yeah.
In both serious and non-serious situations, and
right,
it sounds fine. But I know people who use the term and they sound like some sort of weird 50s throwback and you want to punch them in the face.
Yeah, I understand. But queer is a little bit different word too, because queer has also been appropriated by the academic community to mean defying gender stereotypes in general. Or actually maybe even more specifically, a lot of times the way queer is used in academics, it specifically refers to people who defy gender, such that a gay person might not be queer if they are otherwise gender normative. If the only thing about them is that,
their orientation,
but otherwise they're very macho, they might not be considered queer.
That seems like a terrible thing to do with that term because it's very confusing.
I'm just saying that
I suppose academia wouldn't be fond of the phrase gender fuck, though.
Well,
so
I don't know. The point is that queer is one of those words it's been appropriated by lots of different groups. It's not like the N-word where academia doesn't use that word. And it's pretty much true that if the word is used by an African-American person, that's okay. And if it's used by anyone other than an African-American person, it's not.
Well, there's a lot of heated argument about that, too.
Well, but I know, but queer is not that kind of word. No, it's a lot more complicated.
Right. But nevertheless, like I said, there are individuals that could use queer, and
yeah, that's
it would
true.
Really bug the hell out of me.
That's true.
And you talk about the N-word person. Tranny, of course, is not used in any official capacities. So I suppose that's a point against it.
You know what?
One thing I do hate about tranny is that people don't know what it means, because the problem is there is a very serious distinction between transvestite, transsexual, and transgender. These mean very different things.
That's right. And
if you say tranny, first of all, which one are you talking about?
Well, that's true, but I do have to say, now that we've talked about this for a little bit, I am recalling most of the context I've heard that the term tranny used. It's in relation to a male prostitute who presents as a female.
Yes, most commonly heard as a transvestite, and yes, I suppose there are some. See, and that could be a thing. There,
yeah, that's most of the time I've heard it used. It's in that context.
It is often in a connection to a transvestite prostitute.
Yes,
I
yes,
suppose.
Yes. I hadn't thought about that until just now, but that's right. So maybe that's where it comes from, the notion that it's offensive. I could see that, I guess. I hadn't thought about that, because I was just thinking, like you were saying, there's transsexuals, there's transvestites, there's transgender, and it can be any of those things. But as I think about it, all the context I've ever heard was specifically transvestite and specifically male prostitutes presenting as women. That's usually where it's used.
Well, crap. I'm going to have to tell this guy he's an asshole now.
Well... Of course, his context was, the reason the first thing was funny was because the kid didn't know what he was saying.
Well, except he's a comedian. He also might have totally made up the story.
Oh, well, I suppose.
But I'm guessing he did not.
Well, but
well, and I think the second thing is funny, because basically implying that whatever concerns certain gender normative individuals might have of letting your son play with anything that might be trans. He's like, dude, it's better than anything associated with Michael Bay, which is not at all wrong.
Although the first part of the joke about training the
transvestite,
he probably was wanting people to think of a prostitute, don't you?
Well,
think?
See, and I don't know. Or I feel like somebody replied to him that I wouldn't see in my Twitter feed that brought that up.
Yeah, it's hard
like,
to say.
I don't know the details. It's mostly because at the time I didn't even pay any attention. Because it was very... The first thing was funny. The second thing, kind of funny. Whatever. And then, like I said, the internet lost its mind.
Speaking of the internet losing its mind and the mention we've had of the N-word so far.
Yes.
A lot of people think that it's ridiculous to say the N-word. But let me just say, I just cannot bring myself to say that word in any context. Because to me... It represents so many horrible, horrible things. If there was a similar word that represented the Holocaust, I wouldn't want to say that word either. And
there is. It's called the Holocaust.
Well, I mean, that represents...
Pejorative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what that word is. If someone said, yeah, there is such a word, it's this, I would feel like throwing up just hearing it, probably.
See,
I mean, that's how bad these words are. And I am the first person, as a student of human behavior, and also a student of linguistics and whatever. I understand words are just words, blah blah blah, all the arguments people make. But for me, it's a very personal thing to not say it, because I do find it personally objectionable. And if someone else has a different opinion, they can do what they want. And I'm not going to think someone should be fired for using it in a particular context or whatever. But for me personally, I feel like I need to take a shower on the inside whenever that word would come out of my mouth.
See, and I...
And there's lots of words like that, too.
I have weird layers to this, because I tend to be a fairly strong proponent that no language should be censored and all language should be freely usable by whoever.
That's fine.
Ideally.
And I agree with that.
Ideally. However... I am also strongly aware that, especially within certain contexts, that word has tremendous negative power and can do some serious damage, and I am very much opposed to that. And then on a third level, I really can't ever bring myself to say it, and I'm fairly certain that is 100% my socialization. I believe that somewhere in the back of my brain, whatever my conscious views on it, because sitting here making the argument, even with the mic off, I should be able to say it, talk about it, and I have, but rarely, and it feels really weird and creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I honestly believe it's because my whole life, it's been drilled into me, obliquely or explicitly, how bad that is. So much so that I don't have a taboo, so like there's no forbidden fruit thing about it. It's not, you know,
tantalizing in any
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just like,
yeah, yeah. Well,
but I think that, I mean, I don't feel like I've objectively like looked at the social implications or whatever and decided it's
there. Right.
I feel like since I was born, the world around me in all sorts of ways I can't even think has stuck that in my head and I can't get rid of it.
Well, and some people would argue that whenever our society gets to the point where this word doesn't mean anything to anybody anymore, that'll be a good day. I don't agree with that assessment at all. I mean, if in some time in the future we've actually left racism behind and the word doesn't have any meaning anymore to anybody, yeah, I'm sure that'll be good. But if we've left racism behind, but people still remember that we're leaving something behind, I don't think that's going to be such a bad thing. I think it would be good for us to remember how horrible that was so that it doesn't come back. Because things that are forgotten can come back, anything.
And the thing is, it becomes a weird cyclical thing because if that word ceases to have any function because we're so past it, then no one would ever use it.
Well, that's right, too. But it, to me,
You're using it in whatever context, if you're using it ironically, if you're using it in a joke or whatever, that would not happen unless there was still an issue there.
That's right. That's right. And there is still an issue there. That's part of the problem.
Absolutely.
And that's another thing that bothers me is some people think, oh, you guys are perpetuating racism by having a problem with this word. No, the word is still a problem because there is still an issue. And if you don't think there is, I mean, you know, I had a friend who you know, I was talking about racism today, and I had a friend saying, you know what, it's just adults like you and me who think racism is still a problem, but the kids are past it, and if we didn't keep talking about racism all the time, these kids would never know anything about it. Of course, he didn't know anything. I mean, I don't know whose kids he was talking to, and he must not have been talking to his kids, but I can tell you from talking to the kids that I had interaction with in the last 8 years, racism is almost worse in high schools and stuff as it ever was.
Years ago, when I was still playing World of Warcraft, this was one of my like side characters, was on some server. I didn't know a lot of people. I had just joined some other server to mix things up, and I had gotten into this little guild or whatever. And it's an afternoon or something, and so it's just a couple of us on in guild chat, and one of them was doing something where they were doing some combat thing or whatever, and they got really missed. And they got in there and they said, oh, they got... And referred to them, well, a bunch of swear words, which I'm like, whatever. Jewish N-words.
Oh, my God.
And I immediately respond with, what the hell? And we had this huge argument in which they were very apologetic because they didn't understand that I was on there and that I had such an issue with swearing.
God.
And we had an argument for like 15 minutes, and I could not explain it to them.
Yeah.
I tried partially by using a whole bunch of swear words in my explanation to show that that was not the point. And they just didn't get it.
Well, the number of racist rants you can find online is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
How can anyone say that we're beyond racism now when, I mean... I mean, it's terrible.
Well, it's the same argument by saying, oh, you know, when you have feminist studies, you're just encouraging separation and you're promoting sexism. It's like, no. The problem exists, and ignoring it doesn't make it go away.
That's right. That's right.
Now, it'd be great if we didn't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But that'll come much later. And you know what? By then, we won't think about worrying about it because we won't need to worry about
it. Exactly right. I don't know.
It's a tough thing, and it's why, despite the fact that I now fill copy machines for a living, I'm very glad for my college education, because there was a lot of stuff that I learned about what's going on in the world that is very important.
Well, and to be honest, if you grow up...
I can never watch MTV again, but that's fine.
If you grow up in Iowa, where most people are white.
Oh, yeah.
And most people are at least pretending they're straight.
And most people are at least pretending they're Christian.
Yeah, there's not a lot of variety in terms of culture, and it'd be very easy through, you know, no real fault of your own to think that the entire world is just like you.
Yep.
And now, that does not immediately lead to racism or sexism or whatever else, because, you know, I grew up not knowing any African Americans at all. And for me, that meant when I had an African American roommate when I was a freshman in college, it meant I had no preconceived notions or yes. anything else. So ignorance alone doesn't cause racism or all these isms.
No. What it can lead to very easily is an ignorance of privilege and right. ignorance of whatever the opposite of privilege.
Well, but and not only that, but what if I hadn't gone to college? What if I hadn't roomed with a African American? Then if someone came along and wanted to convince me that there was something wrong with African Americans, I wouldn't have had any experience to counter.
So you might have been like, oh, really? They have three eyes? And, you
know, I mean, who knows what I would have thought.
Yeah.
I mean, I still don't think that's an excuse. I mean, you know, my mom's mother's father came to Iowa because his father was in the Confederate Army and died shortly after the war was over, and his mother did too, and so he ends up coming with an aunt here, and he was very racist. He wasn't a member of the Ku Klux Klan in Iowa, but he was a sympathizer, and I was told this is my mom's grandfather, I was told this about him, and you know, I've learned a lot about him in my, you know, I studied genealogy, I've learned about him, and the fact of the matter is, I have absolutely no respect for this person at all, and I'm very ashamed to have anyone like this in my family tree. Now, what he believed doesn't have anything to do with what I believe, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't feel responsible for what he believed or whatever. But I think that's part of where my disgust comes from, is knowing that in my family tree there are people like this who hated people for the color of their skin, and I find that deplorable, just deplorable. Of course, there were a lot of people in my family who were abolitionists, and you know, and they poured the slave trade, and they tried to do things about it. And of course, I'm proud of those people. Obviously, you know, they weren't successful enough. But I do have some people in my family tree, very few, thank goodness, who had slaves and all this stuff. And I just find that awful. I find it just awful.
I kind of find your family awful now, too. Way to go.
Well, I mean, I don't think, you know, people make fun of white folks who feel guilty about slavery and everything. And I don't really want to have a debate about that. But the fact of the matter is that I'm here because of the ancestors that came before me. And if part of the reason they could survive and reproduce was because they were living off of the backs of slaves or other oppressed people, that doesn't make me feel good about, you know, my even being here. Now, I do think it's ridiculous for a person to sit there and feel guilty about their very existence. You know, I mean, the point is, you live, you're alive now, and you need to go on with your life and do what you can to make the world better. But I think that that's a point about some person's people's ancestry that they can't ignore. I can't ignore it. And so I think that's part of the reason I find it so deplorable, is because I have, you know, I almost knew a guy. I mean, he died before I was born, obviously, but...
Yeah,
but he's my great-grandfather, and he was a horrible racist who I'm glad I never got to know. So that's part of my story when it comes to that particular word and not liking it.
Anything that makes you feel bad makes me feel better. We're now way over time.
Sorry.
So we should stop. This has been an incredibly untitulating
and unfunny
episode 69.
Well, that's probably good.
Yeah, see?
See, that works for me. But if it doesn't work for our listeners, I apologize.
If it doesn't work for the listeners, let us know. And the episode 70, we will just read erotic fan fiction that we have culled from the net.
No, we
will
not.
The whole hour.
No, that's not what we're going
to
do.
So go to the website and tell us that's what you want at themagicaltalkinghat.com.
I'll be on vacation.
I'll even do it in funny voices. Also, write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com as a and otherwise just keep listening, because without you guys this really feels silly. So all right, night.
Good night.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.